Welcome to this session on consumer protection and why the gender lens matters. Happy Consumer Rights Day. We're looking forward to really a dynamic session and a great discussion amongst our panelists, colleagues of mine from the United Nations Capital Development Fund, colleagues from Gabon, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria, all of whom will get an appropriate introduction in a moment. I'd like to kick off this just very brief intro with some context setting for this session. Over the last couple decades, we've seen some really amazing progress towards financial inclusion for the most vulnerable people in the world. Since 2011, more than a billion people have obtained that simple financial account that could really transform their access to services and that they need on a daily basis. Most governments now have a financial inclusion strategy, and can deliver government payments through formal financial systems. Youth, women, and many other historically marginalized groups are accessing and using products in a way that they hadn't before and on a more regular basis. In the midst of this change, however, COVID-19 has actually driven uptake of many services by virtue of that immobility and lockdowns that was really part of everyone's reality in the early days. So in fact, COVID has actually driven digitization. More people needed an account because they couldn't go anywhere and cash was no longer as simple a tool as it was previously. However, many people remain unconnected and many people remain outside the technological and service infrastructure that we have. So we're now really existing in almost two different worlds. Those, in one sense, COVID has accelerated digitization, and in another sense, it has actually exacerbated the digital divide. And so in the way that the pandemic has exposed the weaknesses in our economic systems and our social systems, we're seeing particularly low and middle income people losing their jobs, seeing their income and assets erode. And it's really exposed the vulnerabilities that we as a development community and committed partners of civil society, private sector and government are committed to try and adjust and adapt to and improve. One thing in particular we see over the horizon, we look at COVID-19, for example, and the current macroeconomic sociopolitical context, things like the hunger crisis, potentially inflation emerging on the horizon. And we're starting to ask ourselves, to what degree can our financial systems leverage digital to make sure that people are protected and can participate in a way that is meaningful in them and protect them from those vulnerabilities and create more resilience? So when we think about quality delivery of financial services for vulnerable people, it's really important that we look to conversations with everyone involved in thinking about a really participative process. And so what we're looking for today is how do we learn from our colleagues and our partners in the field who have really many extraordinary insights about how can we ensure the system protects customers so they have the opportunity to participate in the financial system on their own terms. And in particular, when we look at the digital divide, we look at the uptake of digital services, and we look at who has the greatest potential to transform, in a sense, local, regional, and global economies, we really have to look towards women and ask ourselves the question, to what degree is our formal financial services serving the needs of women? It's much more than just inclusion itself. It's not enough to be included. It has to be useful. And so when we think about consumer protection, it's a key component and a key pillar of our safe and stable financial system. Not only is it the mandate of regulators and governments to protect and create a stable system, but it's also the responsibility of private sector institutions to be responsible and act responsibly and to protect their customers. And equally, it's the responsibilities of individuals to have that capacities to know what they need to expect certain rights and access in terms of information, redress, complaints, et cetera. And when we add a gender lens to that component, it gets fascinating. The opportunities begin to emerge and the challenges become a little bit more crystallized. So in that regard, I'd like to, next slide, please. I believe we have an agenda. So with that intro, I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Frédéric Rouman, who will give you a more concrete sense of the risks and opportunities associated with digital financial services and underserved groups. After which, our colleague, Sophie Falzini, we'll really kick off the most dynamic part of this conversation, which is engaging with many of our three of our partners in particular from Gabon, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone, who really are the meat of this session, and to share their insights and really participate in a dynamic conversation. So enough from me. Thank you all very much for participating, and please put your questions in the chat. And we look forward to an open Q&A towards the end. Allow me to hand it over to Frederick.
Thank you so much, Ahmed. Sophie will present a bit more on the panel later. So that was the slide that you just saw. But yeah, so I'm very happy to have you all. And as Ahmed said already, so one of our focus areas at UNCDF is basically a more kind of dynamic approach to financial consumer protection, as it is our mission to support financial authorities, not only to deepen their expertise, but also kind of to improve the regulatory and supervisory framework for financial consumer protection. And we do this in different ways, where we work very closely with Consumers Internationals in terms of advocacy. We also revise consumer regulation, consumer protection regulations, if they are existent. If they are not existent, we also help countries set them up. We work on an evidence-based decision-making, for instance, with CGAP very closely. We have always public consultation because especially consumers' voice is very crucial for us because it's the consumers implementing the frameworks in the end. And one of our core aspects is also a supervision and implementation. And at the same time, we provide free scholarships and capacity building, not only for policy design, but also for supervision. We work in 14 countries in three regions in sub-Saharan Africa and also Middle East and North Africa. Our vision is by 2030 that all governments in Africa enable a fair and safe financial services and take action to protect and also empower consumers, especially the most underserved groups. Next slide, please. So how does it work in practice? So as I said, we focus in particular on financial consumer protection as such. And there we have to distinguish that some countries might have a consumer protection framework in place, but there might not be a particular link to financial consumer protection as such and in terms of digital finance. So if this doesn't exist, we try to work with regulators to encompass laws, that encompasses laws, regulations, and institutional arrangements that safeguard all consumers in the financial market place, including digital finance, of course. In terms of supervision, one of our core parts is also in terms of part of the market conduct, is to ensure effective implementation of the regulatory framework. But a precondition for all of this is, of course, that first, there is a policy commitment from the government to work on consumer protection and really acknowledge the importance of, as such, that there is an institutional mandate, that there are resources and staff for regulation and also supervision in place, and that there is a regulator coordination, of course, also including civil society. Next slide, please. But yeah, let's set the topic as such in kind of a scene to really understand the global picture of why a gender lens is relevant for consumer protection. And for this, we really need to look globally. And globally, even in the 23rd century, 1 billion women globally still has no access to financial services. While the number, you know, if you look globally of who owns a mobile phone in low and middle income countries, it seems high, 83%. In real figures, you know, it's still 374 million people that remain unconnected. Women. So one third of the world's population is still financially illiterate, and women are disproportionately affected. But of course, we also shouldn't forget the portion of women kind of that works in the informal economy. If we just look in sub-Saharan Africa, 90% of women work in the informal sector. So if you don't have a financial inclusion framework in place, and if you even do, they will not benefit from it because they work in the informal economy. So financial inclusion largely rests on a well-functioning, inclusive, and transparent regulatory environment for consumer protection, because that can create trust that actually more people move to the public, to the formal economy. But let's move to the next slide. So why are women mostly affected by consumer risk? I mentioned it before, it actually has to be the consumers themselves that implement it. But often there's also a lack that consumers' voices is not actually taken into consideration in the policy making process or even in the policy design process. Often among these 1 billion women, there's also a lack of IDs. So, and also in some countries, at least in the least developed countries, there's often an absence of a central ID registry system. And sometimes there are no alternative ID methods. And also in terms of risk-based customer due diligence. So they cannot simply open a bank account or even use mobile money because they don't have a digital, an ID or a digital ID. Often there's also a lack of sex disaggregated data that doesn't take into consideration kind of the gender gaps or what women need. And in most countries, there's also a lack of consumer protection data. There's also a lack of complaints management mechanism to see perhaps that the most vulnerable might face discrimination or others. There's also poor safeguards of data protection. Some countries don't even have a data protection framework in place. Often this goes hand in hand with consumer protection. I mentioned it before, but there's also a lack of trust in the financial system that is kind of preventing people from moving from the informal economy to the formal economy and its respective underlying regulations that are not trusted at all. And then there's a limited representation of women in the decision-making positions and limited resources for supervision. So they might be financial illiterate impacted by this, but then there might be also a lack of skills and resources in this place of really ensuring the implementation of financial frameworks. Next slide, please. So where can a gender lens make a difference for financial consumer protection? So often we see an opportunity for also lowering the KYC requirements for just opening an account and also in relation to AML and CFTA regulations. We could enhance, we see a lot of potential in enhancing and even build a supervision for implementing FCP guidelines. We see an opportunity to enhance skills and deliver capacity building to cultivate more female leadership in FCP at senior levels. So for instance, what we do at UNCDF is that we have a particular focus on giving scholarships also for female advocates in this field and regulators. There's an opportunity to implement national biometric ID systems. There are very good examples in Tanzania and Ethiopia also in this field. Maybe Sophie will speak more about this later in the discussion. There's also an opportunity to improve the understanding of women's experience of consumer-related risk through disaggregated data. And again, CGAP has a lot of research done on like how to have more customer-centric outcomes. There's also a need to include a gender lens in financial inclusion strategies and policy guidelines. There we see a huge opportunity, not just to advocate for women empowerment, but also to kind of really more structurally include gender lens in regulations and policy programs. There's also an opportunity to convene and amplify consumer voices, especially the underserved. So, and this you can just do in terms of having kind of a multi-stakeholder engagement and including women at the table. So a strong commitment to financial customer protection, consumer protection is important for a healthy, inclusive market in which women trust the financial systems. But now I spoke a lot about the theory. Let's hear more about how all of this works in practice. We have a lot of nice speakers on the table, and I hand it over to our moderator, Sophie, to introduce the panel.
Yes, thank you very much, Frederic, and welcome also from my side to this exciting webinar. So actually, let's move on already to our next speaker, Virginie Munanga. So Virginie is the CEO of Blanc Crystal, an agency based out of Gabon, specialized in digital communication and digital transformation. Through her engagement on fostering inclusivity in Gabon, she has become a figure in the digital sector of the country. And also, very importantly, she's a member of UNCDF CIMAC panel, which aimed at accelerating the digital financial inclusion of women in Central and West Africa. So Virginie, welcome. Thank you for joining us today. So Frederic spoke about the importance of inclusivity and especially in the digital financial space. So first question to you would be, in your opinion, what are the needs of underserved groups that are often unaddressed by existing frameworks?
Okay. Hello, Sophie, and thank you for this invitation, first of all. I would like to, in the beginning, to talk about underserved group. We see particularly low-income people like persons with disability, women, and youth with no education. So the needs of underserved group often are unaddressed, that we acknowledge our financial inclusion with advanced universal access and use of financial services. Digital inclusion due to lack of finance and lack of digital training, difficult access to internet due to high price and tax of communication. If I can take an example here in Gabon, I can see that, you know, we have three types of people, three types of unaddressed group, like underserved group, We have women who don't trust on digital finance because of fees, because sometimes they don't know exactly what it will cost. We have also illiterate people who don't know exactly how to use financial media. And this is, you know, a barrier to use it. Also, we have the connection, you know, some of women didn't have access to connection of some rural area. You know, you don't have the fluent network. So this is, you know, the main ones who stop, you know, we can block the access of financial digital media, digital finance,
Thank you. This is extremely useful, and it's especially important to hear your perspective from Gabon. Yeah. And perhaps a follow-up question for you. So how do you think we can improve financial inclusion processes and consumer protection for underserved groups in Gabon? So from your perspective, what do you think
The thing is, we have to keep in mind that underserved groups are potential consumer groups who can greatly contribute to social and economic growth. So we have to take into account their needs, and we might improve digital acceleration as well as financial growth at lots of companies. According to me, you know, approve a financial inclusion process for underserved groups in Gabon. We should prepare, you know, an effective way, the process of digitalization and banking by bearing in mind the several and the level of knowledge about the subject. We should demonstrate the high relevance of ICT in financial inclusion process and put an accent on education and training for this group. This is, you know, the main recommendation we give on the UNDCF panel. Like, we see that lots of women didn't have, you know, training, you know, they don't know exactly how to use it. So we have to put an accent, particular accents on education, train them and more understand. Also, the other point, it's the communication. The lack of communication sometimes with the financial or the mobile, you know, mobile technology financing, they didn't talk more with the consumer. So we have to improve, you know, both communication between women and the banker, but also a regulator would also make an effort like that. We should definitely improve chain of communication. We can be aligned to Gabonese culture and strategically connect financial structure to underserved groups. So this is, you know, the main recommendation I can give. It's more, you know, communication and also improve, you know, connection significant. This is what I can say.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if you need more detail about that, but you know, this is the main point we describe, like when we have the panel.
No, I think this is extremely valuable, and I understand how valuable your experience as part of the CMAC panel has been. And I think we can come back later to that, as we have also another round of questions. And exactly, so consumer protection has to be communicated clearly. People have to be trained, also customers. And staying on this specific topic, I would take the occasion to move to our next speaker and introduce Felicia Monier. So Felicia is a professor of law at the University of Nigeria, as well as Council Member of Consumers International and Startups Organization in Nigeria. She's also board member of the International Association of Consumer Law and founder and president of Consumers Awareness Organization. She's been published several times, awarded many prizes, and she today will provide us the perspective of consumer protection in Nigeria. So looking at the gaps, the opportunities, and especially, which is interesting to us, the role of women. And so let's actually look at what does it mean to enforce a legislation. So Felicia, you heard Virginie before, she has highlighted the need for more communication on the benefits of consumer protection regulation. And Nigeria, as you explained us already before, has an existing consumer protection framework. The central bank has become very active in promoting consumer protection legislation. But in your opinion, what are the challenges in enforcing the consumer protection regulation in the field of digital financial services, and how can this be implemented? So over to you.
Sophie, thank you for this invitation. In fact, I thank the team of UNCDF for collaborating in this program. Just like you rightly said, Nigeria has an active regulator in the financial sector, and that regulator is the Central Bank of Nigeria. And like you also mentioned, the central bank has issued many regulations. In fact, we have two basic laws in the field. We have the Central Bank Act 2007. We also have the Banks and Other Financial Services and Other Financial Institutions Act 2020, which replaced the 1991 version. So, but all these laws, the previous laws did not focus on gender inclusion or gender lens. We can describe the old laws as being gender neutral, or maybe just supporting gender equality, just like other characteristics, race, religion, and others. So no special program for women, but from the maybe from 2016, that's under the consumer protection framework, we started seeing a little different, just a little, because the framework just mentions gender equality and special services, but not tailored or not focused on a particular gender. But then some banks have been using that to give special incentives to women. So that didn't change things much. But later, in fact, the latest framework we have now, or the latest guideline, that is the framework for advancing women's financial inclusion. So this is specific on women, and it has specific provisions on how to enhance the participation of women in the financial sector. So I can say that we are beginning to experience a positive change from gender neutrality to women-centered initiatives. So we are hoping that in terms of implementation, that the right results will be realized. But then when you talk about the challenges are still there. Some of them are general, you know, some of them affect both male and female customers or populations of the country. You have lack of education as one of the challenges. You have lack of income or lack of education, then lack of trust, which you even mentioned in your own presentation. So, with particular reference to women, you also have marital status. So women who marry very early do not have time to build their skills, and that's also a problem. Then on a general note, location is a problem, still a problem in Nigeria. Those located in the rural areas do not enjoy as much financial access as those in the urban areas. The internet service is also a problem. In the rural areas, many people do not enjoy internet service. And added to this, you also have inability to purchase the devices needed for digital financial services, phones, computers, and the like. And even when you have some of them have the ability, you also talk about the literacy, financial literacy. How many people can operate this, especially women in the rural areas? So these are some of the things, even though the central bank is pursuing maybe financial inclusion, and the latest program rolled out by the bank is to the fact that by 2024, that Nigeria should have about 95% inclusion of both male and female. But talking specifically about the female gender, right now the gap is even becoming wider. Why is this so? In fact, the financial exclusion of women in Nigeria right now is 46.5. That is the research that is available now. And when you talk about women, women are special people in the sense that many of them are cautious of their money. I know that men are also cautious of their money, but a woman doesn't want to lose her resources because her family, everything about her revolves on her own resources. A woman will want to train her children, even when the husband has the means to do so. She takes particular attention. She takes particular interest in all those things. So she wants to invest well and earn good profit. And you see, when we talk about financial inclusion, there's something I always say. You don't just talk about, and Ahmed mentioned part of it, you don't just talk about inclusion. You must also talk about usefulness. If I'm included, what do I have to gain? You must talk about incentives, and that is the missing point. That is the missing point in many countries, including Nigeria. Nigeria now, what is the interest rate? Because if I want to save my money, I also want to make money. I don't just want to dump my money in the bank. At the end of the month, how much interest do I have? Savings rate is about 2% per annum. 2% per annum. So if I invest, I'm using a different currency, 100,000. I put my 100,000 in the bank, and end of the month, I get about 150 or 160. You may not understand this when you convert, it's just nothing. So what's the incentive to put my money there? So there is not just inclusion in the sense that we must all have accounts. If you are preaching inclusion, you must preach benefits. What are the benefits of financial inclusion? What are the benefits of digital financial inclusion? When you now talk about digital financial inclusion, if I use my ATM card to withdraw money, what do I gain? What do I lose? Nigeria has done a little there, because before the rate was 65 naira. If you withdraw from another bank using your ATM, it was 65 naira. But now it has been reduced. The central bank has reduced it to 35 naira after the fourth withdrawal. So that's an incentive. And if you withdraw from your own bank using your ATM, You don't pay anything irrespective of number. So those are the things we want to hear from the financial regulators. So
I think you just made a perfect segue for our next speaker. I think 2 points you made are extremely relevant, right? So we don't only talk about inclusion, we talk about the usefulness of what we do. And also, I think we have to understand financial behaviors of women in order to target their needs. So in order for financial inclusion to be useful, we really need to understand what is the challenge, what is the problem. And actually, thank you very much for that, because now, Philippe, you have challenging task before you. So our next speaker is Philippe Bangura. He's Assistant Director of the Consumer Protection and Credit Reference Bureau at the Bank of Sierra Leone. Through his work, he has contributed greatly towards addressing the issues of financial inclusion. Philippe, we are very excited to have you here. Given that you bring to our discussion your insights from a new point of view, which is the one of a regulator. So you just have heard from Felicia that also having a regulation is not enough, that if there's no clear implementation strategy, this wouldn't work. So perhaps I would like to ask you, what were the challenges in implementing financial consumer protection guidelines in Sierra Leone? Over to you, and thank you again.
Thank you, Sophia. Thank you for having me. The big challenge we had was banks don't want to take that responsibility, you know, knowing that the central bank is watching and enforcing, as Felicia said, banks don't want that. So we had some few challenges with them initially. Because what we've been doing as a central bank, we have been addressing customers' complaints, which should not be our role. Our role is to enforce that from the financial services providers. They're supposed to address complaints. But we've been taking that leading role because they were not available. And so far, with the support of UNCDF, we were able to look at guidelines from other jurisdictions, most especially within the sub-region, Nigeria, Ghana, and so on, to be able to see what they're doing to protect consumers and see what we can do because we share similarities in culture. So we looked at that and we were able to come up with the documents that we've finalized now. But the key challenges had to be with financial institutions not wanting to take responsibility and consumers not understanding their rights and responsibilities. So those were some other things we've done with that part.
This is great. Thank you very much. And perhaps building up on that and given that our session explicitly focused on the most underserved and women, so can you perhaps elaborate a bit more on the consultation process for your draft consumer protection guidelines, and why was it important in your point of view to include women, and you know, which were the challenges you faced maybe during this process?
Okay. With the consultation process, we consulted the banks and we consulted the consumers, market women, teachers, students, and we had a discussion with them. And during our discussion, we learned a lot because there have been a lot of challenge between the banks and the consumers as to areas that we've included in the guidelines that they did not like. For the banks, they were not happy with the cooling off because we included a cooling off period of 10 days where customers can take a loan. And then after 10 days, if they don't feel comfortable with the loan, they can return it without any penalty. The banks were saying that it's too long because the customers who want short-term loan will exploit that, take the loan, and then after 10 days, return the loan without paying any interest, neither penalty. But we were looking at a situation where we need to give the customers an opportunity. The customers, obviously, when we consulted with them, they were excited. They love that. But at the end of the day, we reduced it to 5 days instead of 10. And what we've done is we've asked the banks to record the names of all those who utilize the cooling off period. And that information should be sent to the central bank to avoid abuse of the system. So those who realize are in the habit of taking loans And after, because they have a cooling off period, they return the loan. If we note that a particular individual is in the habit of doing that, we will obviously shut them down from the system because we want to ensure that that particular facility is meant for those benefiting and those who really need it. Another issue that came up with the consumers were the issue of debt collection. They complained that banks are using aggressive method to collect debt. They will go and meet them in their marketplaces and are very aggressive with them, and everybody will know that this is what's going on. So they want us to see how we can control that. So within the guidelines, we've identified steps you have to take before and which do not include this aggressive behavior. This behavior, we've asked the consumers to report that. And we agree that they can contact the consumers every day within a particular period, because that was also another issue the banks were not happy with. They wanted an open timeline because they said some of the consumers leave their home very early and go there very late. So they want to be sure that they meet them there. So that was also another issue that we addressed. And another one has to deal with the women being discriminated against. Well, what we did in a bit of urgency, we issued a directive with regards to access to credit for women, that women should not be discriminated against. But and up to now, we haven't received any complaint as to whether women are discriminated. Though we realize that if we wait for them to come and complain, we will never get the complaint. So what we've instituted now, that probably we'll start getting the data later, is now we want all financial services providers to send us the list of all those who apply for loan and all those who are approved, all the gender. So we are able to see, and the reason why those who are declined, why they were declined. So we are able to see the proportion of women applying and actually accessing loan, and then the proportion of men applying and accessing loan, and the reason why some of these loans are not approved. So we are able to understand whether discrimination exists. Because for now, if they don't come and complain, you don't have any way of knowing that. But if we are able to get this data that we've never collected before, that could help us address that issue. I think that's where I can stop for now. I don't know.
Thank you very much. I think you made a very important point. And I think we can summarize it with, we need to improve communication among all stakeholders, from customers to the central bank. So this is important to make sure that trust is built within the financial, the formal financial system, and that discriminations do not take place. But then also another relevant thing you touched upon, which actually goes back to Frederick's presentation before, it's we need data. We need more sex disaggregated data to really understand what's going on, what's the problem, where the challenge lies, in order to act upon that. So I think, this is very in line with our approach, and not only ours. And I'm very glad you brought those topics up. So perhaps I see there have been no further questions from the audience yet. So perhaps let me ask you a final round of questions to all of the speakers. And this will be the same question for everybody, so feel free to interpret it as you prefer, and then perhaps keep your messaging a bit shorter than before so that we can allow for the audience to ask questions. So, Felicia, I might start with you, and then we'll do the round. I would like to ask you, how can development partners and local advocates help consumer protection authorities drive policy change for financial consumer protection, especially with a very strong gender lens?
Okay, Sophie, I'm very happy that you asked this question, because I was also going to make that comment based on the summary you gave and the presentation, the last aspect of Philip's presentation on data, the importance of data, evidence-based approach to issues. Because it's not just enough to say that in Nigeria, many women are not financially included, or in Gabon, many women are not financially included. You must have data produced from a survey. And your question as regards the role of sponsors or donor agencies like UNCDF. When you, yes, I think it was during the briefing that I raised this. See, it's very good when donor agencies support the regulators to produce a sound financial system, for instance, because the outcome of any such project still benefits consumers. In other words, consumers are the ultimate beneficiaries of whatever support is given to the regulators. But then we must also look at the consumer groups, because these people are independent in nature and they interrogate from a different perspective. When I listened to Philip, I was impressed with what the consumer groups did regarding the cooling period, regarding the aggressive method of recovering loan. Regulators will not see from that angle. Of course, service providers will not see from that angle. And when you leave implementation, maybe if you leave just the regulators to regulate and implement, there's a problem, there's a gap. That means that everything about consumer protection will remain in the domain of the regulators and service providers. And somehow they belong to the same group. That's how we see them. So there must be an independent voice. And the independent voice must be provided by consumer groups. So it's important when donor agencies are assisting in any field at all, including financial inclusion and digital financial inclusion, then civil society organizations must come in. Voluntary consumer associations must come in. Because when they come in the first place, they see consumers from a different angle. They understand the concerns of consumers. They know the challenges that consumers have. So when they are participating, they'll be able to bring the consumer angle into the decision-making process. And when the consumer angle is included in the decision-making process, implementation problem will be reduced. Because at that stage of decision-making, most of the thorny issues would have been resolved through cross-fertilization of ideas, through constructive criticisms and others. So sponsorship must extend to consumer groups. And of course, must extend to the regulators, because I always say that consumer groups must collaborate with the regulators. Reason being that when it comes to enforcement and implementation, that the regulators have the machinery to carry out effective enforcement. But consumer groups play a very important role, because they will be the ones to explain the system to consumers, to explain the benefits and the detriments. If there are risks associated with that process, they will be in a better position to explain to consumers in an objective manner. So consumers must be empowered, because if you don't have the empowerment, you can't even do an effective lobbying, you can't do an effective enforcement, you cannot advise consumers appropriately. So we need all these things. So any sponsorship that is restricted to regulators will not work. But if regulators are supported, consumer groups are supported, so that consumer groups will be empowered, they will have the ability to influence the process and even to drive the process.
Indeed. Thank you very much. And I think that's an excellent point, which we'll take home as well. And actually, this is part of the approach we're trying to follow. We want to talk to both regulators, to both consumers association, and to make the happy middle, right? To make sure that both stakeholders talk to each other and that we can actually base our action on, that our action are fact-based, right? So that we bring the real issues to the regulators. And perhaps speaking of regulators, Philip, might I ask you the same questions? maybe just for you, how can development partners and local advocates help consumer protection authorities drive policy change for financial consumer protection while embedding a gender lens?
Thank you very much. I think for us, we've been blessed to be supported by UNCDF in developing our guidelines. So we'll just encourage UNCDF and other developing partners that have supported us to continue to support us, especially with on-site and off-site supervision. We'll still need some skills. Financial consumer protection is still new to us. And also with possibly a database to help us remotely monitor complaints real time, because that's very important. For local advocates, they need to help us with sensitization and financial education. So they need to work with the central bank to ensure we educate a lot of people and they know that this law is there and it protects them. And also has to do with, because that's one key issue we included in our guidelines, that every financial contract should be read in the language that the consumer understands. So, and then the consumer should thumbprint if they cannot sign every page of that contract to ascertain they understand the document. Sometimes when they need the loan, they can just thumbprint without even understanding the document. So we expect this local advocate, these groups, to ensure they tell these consumers and ensure that this part of it is also enforced. We can help as a central bank, but we have our limitation. Our local advocates, local partners within those championing consumer rights can help us with that. So that is how I think we can move. And with regards to the gender, what we've given out as a directive, we will try to include those in our, this is just the guidelines. We have to do an act. So with our lessons learned and we are able to see from real-time data how women are being discriminated against, we will be able to include that in the law that will be passed in Parliament in the near future. So for us, this is what we would do and what we need. Thank you.
This is great. And actually, speaking of local advocates, I think I can't but give the word to Virginie. And as we said before, Virginie was a very, very important member of the UNCDF CMAC panel, which maybe Virginie, if you want, you can say a couple of words about the panel, what you did during the panel. The panel actually brought together advocates, mainly women from the CMAC region, and they created joint recommendations, and our report on this recommendation will come out soon. So we hope to be able to share with you very soon. But Virginie, she was part of the whole process. She knew how difficult it is to bring the voice of the consumers to the forefront. So do you want to say a couple of words about that and wrap up our discussion? Go ahead.
Yeah, just that I agree. I fully agree with Felicia's point of view and also my brother in the regulation. Because, you know, it's very important to create this group of composed of consumers, you know, to have a voice when regulator takes some decision. We have here in Gabon a concern. Sometimes when the regulator takes a decision, you know, the consumer just take it like that. You know, we are not informed. We don't know exactly why they take this decision. And, you know, it's something very difficult. I think that we have to very improve the communication. I agree with what they said. And this is one of the main recommendations we have. Also training and also improve, you know, the services. Like we have to find, you know, the words more appropriate for the underserved groups, you know, because sometimes the financial world is so complicated, but you have to find, you know, the way to explain to them and to, you know, it will be easier, you know, to improve inclusion, digital inclusion for women. So this is what I can say, but thank you so much because it was great to have, you know, all this discussion and I will put it also in the recommendation we have on the panel.
Thank you very much, Virginie. And perhaps to add, a very important part of the recommendation of the CMAC panel was the importance of consumer protection. And so this is something, and especially the voice of women. And we thought this is a great opportunity actually for women to express their needs. And given that they came from different regions, from different countries, this is even more special because each country has different needs. and this has to be have to be portrayed. So, dear attendees, speakers, this session has been very, very enriching. I see people are still thinking about which questions to ask. So in the meantime, maybe for the sake of understanding, I'll just make a very small summary of everything we heard. This won't give justice to all of your comments, but I hope maybe it will help us summarize a bit the discussion. So from Virginie, we heard that we do not have to forget the underserved. The underserved groups are potential consumers who can contribute to social and economic growth, right? Mm-hmm. To improve the financial inclusion process for the underserved, accent should be put on digitization. And as you said before, and you're an advocate for that, Virginie, digital literacy and especially better communication have to be present, and we have to invest more resources on that. And then Felicia, she highlighted how important consumer protection regulations are, but that they have to specifically target women, their needs, and consumers. Of course, regulations are important, but they have to be followed by clear implementation plans, which serve a specific purpose. And I think what you said before, Felicia, is extremely relevant on, you know, donors must talk to regulators, but also to consumers, and civil society organizations have to come in to close the gap. And third, Philip, I think you made a strong point before on sex disaggregated data, which we as UNCDF share very much. And in order to understand the size of the gender gap, build strategies around that, and then also highlighting the challenges faced by regulators, which of course is something we need to take into account well when we cooperate with them. I just saw a question coming in. So how can policymakers raise awareness around consumer protection and ensure that consumers are aware of their rights? Is anybody from the panel wanting to take this question, maybe in 1 minute? And if not, perhaps a sub question could be, what do you see as biggest opportunity for 2022? I don't know, Philip, do you wanna get us started in like 1-2 minute? Response?
Come again with the question, please.
So perhaps the first question would be, how do you think policymakers can raise awareness around consumer protection or make sure that consumers are aware of their rights? Because you said before, right? So financial literacy is important, but is there anything else we can do from your regulatory perspective?
Well, for us, apart from the financial education that we've been doing, we have to do a lot of sensitization local, go to the different local chieftaincy, local region, and talk to the people there, because we need to let them understand. It's all part of this financial inclusion drive, because some of them are yet to join the financial system because they don't have confidence based on what they hear. So we need to have groups of consumers who have made complaints and have been successfully, issues been successfully addressed, use them as case study in some of this community. So they tell you, I had this experience and I made a report, and within 3 days it was resolved. So when they see this real situation in their community, it gives them more confidence to use the system. And we have that peer group. So we identify champions in all of this town that we use, we work with as a central bank, to educate them and pass on this message. So that is how we intend to disseminate the information further, rather than just using TV and radio adverts.
This is very relevant. And I think I actually saw a pretty nice question coming in, which I think it's, I'd like perhaps Felicia to take a stab at it. So what do you think, what do you see as biggest opportunity for 2022? Like, when you think at 2022, what is the, you know, best thing which had happened? Maybe just, yes, unmute on that.
Okay, thank you. The biggest opportunity I can think of is financial literacy. Financial literacy, that's enlightenment campaign financial literacy, on how on financial inclusion based on or driven by financial literacy. You cannot go into digital financial services if you do not have the literacy to do that, the ability to do that. And there are two stages when you talk about digital financial services. The first is financial inclusion. You must be financially included before you migrate to digital financial services. So, but then how do you even become financially included? You must have the means to do that. So we must also emphasize on job creation. Activities that give income to people, including women. We must emphasize women because in Nigeria, for instance, we have a population of about 200 million people. That's a very huge number, 200 million people. And out of this number, about 49% of Nigerians are women, 49. So a very large number to almost 100 million. So you can't afford to ignore this group of people. So you must give financial, to achieve financial inclusion, you must give financial or economic power to women. So revenue generating events must be initiated for women. That's my take on that.
This is great. And actually, I saw that while you were speaking about financial literacy, Virginie was just shaking her head. So I guess she was, yeah, she shared your opinion as well. Virginie, do you want to add anything on that? So go ahead.
Yeah, I think we should also, you know, increase trustworthy of, you know, all the framework on financial inclusion and all the decision. You know, this is also very important because, you know, lots of women didn't trust, you know, the bank and didn't trust, you know, to use digital media, you know, to do payments, everything, you know. So it's very important that we took good decision and reassure, you know, women on using digital banking for everything.
Yeah, and actually, thank you very much for that, because I think if I would summarize this whole session with one word, it would be the importance of building trust within the consumer groups, with the regulators, among each other, with donors. And I think, you know, throughout this session, we managed to do that, both highlighting the challenges and the opportunities. I see we are very close to the end of our webinar. And I think on behalf of my entire team, Ahmed, Mariana, all those in the back scene, Frederic, we would like to thank you very much for your presence. Your engagement, for contributing to the discussion, especially. We'd like to thank most of all Consumers International for having hosted us, and for highlighting once again that consumer protection and gender have to be on the forefront of our agenda and continue to be on the forefront of our agenda. So if you're still not annoyed by us and want to watch the session again and again, I believe that the recording shall be made public on the website on Consumers International. And also, given that those days are packed with presentations and webinars, we do invite you to join another key session, which will take place tomorrow, March 16th. Where Consumers International and our members will launch a consumer statement on Buy Now, Pay Later. And this will outline consumer risks associated with such products and call for 6 recommendations to strengthen and regulate such products. And also, if you're very interested in knowing more about how to mitigate consumer risks, especially for the most underserved and women mostly, and do join CGAP session tomorrow.